Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. I still live in the sticks where you wouldn't go. In a town of 1200 off an old dirt road. And a country boy is all I'll ever be.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Mountain Man Dan Show. We're here tonight with Nick. Nick, how's the weather down there in Tennessee?
Well, yesterday it was 60 degrees, and today it's 60 and sunny.
Yeah, it's still well below zero here. It's been between 20 and 30 below. I think 15 below right now, but still freaking cold. This has been the I think this has been the coldest winter I can ever remember here in Alaska, and the most snow I've ever seen in this part of the state.
Well, you know that global warming, everything's warming up.
Yeah, they keep saying that, and we got Greta running around on her cruise ship trying to tell us we got to pay more taxes to cool the planet, but I'm not sure if I believe it.
Nah, me neither.
So, Nick, what are you carrying today?
Model 66, like I have been since I bought it.
Model 66, uh-huh. I am carrying a little bit of an odd one today. I'm carrying a 4 5/8 inch Ruger Blackhawk, or I'm sorry, Ruger Vaquero and 45 Colt that's been nicknamed the Bastardo.
Nice.
You know, if you follow Jeff Quinn on Facebook, he always uses that term instead of using the actual proper term. I always get a giggle out of it. And after the mishap with that gun the other day, it seems like it was fitting.
I think so.
We'll get into that a little more later on. Let's expand on our what are we carrying topic today. What are you carrying for a knife today?
For a knife? Who is this damn thing? See, I'm not a knife guy. I'm carrying a Cricut M402, which is a bone-handled, just spring-assisted, nothing special.
Yeah, I like knives. I don't collect knives the way I collect guns. Right now in my pocket, I've got a cheapie that the NRA sent me. It's got fake, like, ram horn grips on it. They sent it to me one of the times they wanted more money out of me. My good knives are all packed up in my duffel bags from when I was supposed to go to work last week. So that's all I've got on me today. I just got that little NRE cheapie. It holds a good enough edge for, you know, a regular beater knife.
Yeah, it's all you need.
Yeah. So what do we want to talk about first? We can talk about that 45 Colt, or we can go into a couple of our listener questions.
Let's go on to the listener questions. You start with yours, and I got a couple too.
Okay, we'll alternate. One from you, one from me. So I got a couple. We'll just cover them real quick. One of my fellow loader operators, a stockpile jockey, whatever you want to call him, Jeb, in Idaho. He came up with a couple. But let's go up with this first one here, a beater gun for just rattling around in the back of the truck. What do you got for your idea of a truck gun?
Police trade-in Smith & Wesson Model 10, loaded with 158 grain plus P Buffalo Bore FBI loads.
Okay, yeah, you can pick. Yeah, that's a good option. You know, for me, a truck gun is normally a sub $350. You know, a true truck gun, something that you don't mind just getting beat around.
Police trade-in Model 10s are going right now for anywhere from $240 to $320, and the ones coming back, I can't remember where they're coming from, but they're 10-6s, 7s, and 8s, and they're coming with like holsters, speed loaders, and everything for sub $320.
Yeah, did you go on GunBroker? There's a whole bunch of them listed for like $304.95 or something like that. A whole bunch of them. Go in there and pick your favorite one and order it.
And now I remember where they're coming from. They're old New York State Penitentiary guns. And the thing about the old penitentiary guns is the COs, they don't qualify like police officers. So a lot of those guns have less than 100, less than 50 rounds through them. So it's all holster wear and just wear from taking them in and out of lock boxes and safes. Yeah. So internally, there's still a brand new, perfectly functional Smith & Wesson, and it's a heavy barrel Model 10. You'll never wear it out. Lewis, my friend Lewis, the one who has just had his new son, Lewis Hall the Fourth, he just acquired a police trade-in Model 10. So me and him are going to be doing some stuff, his 10 versus my 66 and all that. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, and you can pick up, like I picked up that, I got that pre-Model 10, that old M&P, you know, I picked that thing up for like $170 plus shipping. You can get those old, you know, 38 fixed sight revolvers pretty cheap most days of the week. That's a good option. When I think truck gun, for me, truck gun's a rifle, because I've almost always have a pistol on my belt and that's big enough to handle anything I need to handle. So the rifle is just there for a little extra power. I have carried just about everything imaginable under the sun behind the back seat of my pickup. There's always a rifle behind the back seat of my pickup. Right now, there is a Remington Model 760 pump action 270 loaded with 150 grain, just regular Hornady round nose. You know, that regular 270 iron sights on it. I think I picked that rifle up for like $50 or something like that, because one of the internal, the lifter or something wasn't working. No, it doesn't have a lifter. What the heck was wrong with it? The little tab on the trigger that makes sure the bolt's all the way forward before you can pull the trigger. That thing was a little bit funky. And once I put a new one of those on there, yeah, I got like $72 into that gun, including parts, shipping, and all that good stuff. So that's what's behind the seat in my truck right now. If it turns up missing, it's not a big deal. But, you know, 270 will handle anything. Like if I run into a moose that's been hit and needs put down, or a caribou, or even a bear or whatever, that 270 will handle it.
Now, if you're talking rifles for a truck gun, then, you know, if you're not really feeling up to going and finding a used deal, honestly, the best thing in the business would be get a CVA single shot hunter in like 44 Magnum or 45-70, 444 Marlin, whatever you want, just as long as it's somewhat of a big bore. If it's going to be a single shot, it may as well be a big single shot. And they're so small, you know, keep a couple boxes of ammunition with it in the truck too. You never know, especially up in Alaska, or if you live up in the mountains, you know, it never hurts to have a decent big bore around with a good supply of ammunition in case your truck gets broke and you're out in the middle of nowhere and you're going to be out there overnight or something like that. You never know. Probably a good way to go. And being a single shot, you know, it can sit out in the cold and all that. You're not going to have to worry about lubrication running out of it or having any issues or magazine related failures. It's pretty foolproof, and most anyone can operate it, you know, your wife, spouse, children, whatever. So that'd probably be a good way to go.
Yeah, I also really like lever guns as a truck gun, you know, an old Winchester 30-30, or like these small pistol caliber carbines, the 44s, 357s, 45 Colts. Those all make really good truck guns. Once summer comes around and I'm actually driving my truck again, it's not just sitting in the yard for weeks at a time, I'll probably end up throwing my Marlin 44 mag behind the seat.
Yeah. Even if you could score up like a Rossi 45 Colt, you know, M92 45 Colt, that'd make a good truck gun, you know, whatever mm-hmm. you can afford.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So what do you got for your first question? What do you got?
Man, yeah, you got me all distracted on truck guns. Now my brain's going on everything. So I believe it was yesterday. Some of the viewers may have noticed I made a post about Smith & Wesson revolvers, old versus new. You know, I was comparing that 19.5-5 Combat Magnum 6-inch and nickel to the modern 2020 production Model 66-8. And I've had some conflicting comments on it. You know, one guy got on the page and said the old ones are built better, and I don't know if I really buy into that, you know, and being told that MIM parts don't belong in a quality gun. You know, even Jerry Miklik says that he prefers the MIM internals because they're more consistent. I will tell you that all my Smith & Wessons I've had from the 70s and the Bangor Punta, they've all been they need to go to a gunsmith to be kind of breathed on a little bit for them to be sweet. My 66 actually feels better than the 19. The cylinder opens and closes easier. The trigger is not as nice, but little things like that. So I got a question about this whole old versus new discussion. Are the new ones actually more durable than the old ones? And also, how are they more durable? Like, what did they do? And I thought I explained it pretty well, you know, with the, like on the 66, for instance, you know, the old K-frame 357s have the real thin forcing cone that's flat on the bottom, you know, ground to where the crane can go up into the frame. And, you know, they redesigned the gas ring on the new ones, and it's got a real thick forcing cone, more material in it and all that. So aside from that, you know, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think the, is it the metallurgy? I mean, obviously, you know, they probably figured out all the weak points in these guns after 50 or 60 years of hard use, and they've started to improve them. So why do people, I guess what he's trying, this person was trying to ask, why do people actually think the new ones are not as good as the old ones? Is it just the whole misty-eyed nostalgia thing of how they look? Or is it, or is there actually something more to it? And can it be applied to like Ruger and Taurus and Charter Arms, all the companies?
So here's my opinion on that. I think that's kind of a two-way street. If you grab a Smith & Wesson or a Ruger or a Colt or any other brand gun that was built in the, let's just say, late 70s, early 80s, and compare it to a brand new one, I think what the first thing you're going to notice is that the fit and the finish on the older guns is a lot nicer. You know, I've seen Colts from the early 1900s that just had an absolute mirror polish bluing on them, and you just don't see that anymore. You know, this is the old Smith & Wesson. You know, I've seen some of the old Smith & Wesson revolvers where you can barely tell where the main part of the frame and the side plate come to meet. And you don't still, you know, you don't see that on the new ones. There's a definite line, and it's because of them, they're all machine fit. There's a little bit more tolerance there, but it goes both ways, because again, I think that all the machine parts being fitted and CNC cut and all that kind of stuff makes for a more consistent product. You know, you can take the hammer out of one gun and drop it right into another gun, and it should work no problems, where the old ones, there was definitely a lot more hand fitting to make changing parts out work the way that they needed to work.
Right.
And then as far as durability, Ruger, I think their guns are pretty much like the Ruger Blackhawk, the new model Blackhawk. It is built exactly the same as it was when they switched over from the three screw in the 1970s. Ruger doesn't change a whole lot on their revolvers. They get something that works and they stick with it. Smith & Wesson is known for changing things. That's why we have dash 6, dash 7, dash 8 and on and whatever they are now on different models. And I think that's a two-way street as well. A lot of times when they make improvements, I think it's to save the cost of machinery or the cost of tooling and whatever. But I think, yes, I think that some of the newer guns are reinforced and are stronger. Plus, I think the metals are higher quality and more consistent than what we would have been seeing 50 years ago.
So, you know, for example, that 19 in my 66, if I gave you an unlimited amount of 125 grain full house 357 magnums and told you to go out and shoot it till it breaks, which one do you think you'd break first?
The 19. They've been known for being a weaker framed 357. They've been known to wear out rather quickly if you shoot all extensively full house 357s in them.
Where, not to say it's a bad gun. It's a beautifully built gun. And if, you know, you keep your magnum usage to maybe 100 to 150 a year and you practice with 38s, the gun will last a lifetime. But if you're like me or Daniel and you're going to go out and burn 500 rounds of Elmer Keith Memorial Magnum loads just for the hell of it, it's probably not going to last you very long.
Yeah, I would, in that situation between those two, I would have to go with that 66 just because I think they're a little bit heavier built. They have made improvements for the longevity of the guns. But Like I said, I think it's a two-way street, but I think in the older ones, like that nickel-plated 19 you have, I bet the fitting the between the metal to metal, metal to wood, the way the sights are on, I'm sure everything is fit and polished, near perfect compared to the new one, where there's probably a lot more noticeable because they just roll grips off of a machine, off of one machine, they roll frames off of another machine, and they slap them together on a third one, and there's only real human contact or anything they have is, you know, the final inspection, but they don't spend a whole lot of time fitting the parts together by hand like they used to.
No,
So
not at all.
it's a little bit of a two-way, it's a little bit of a two-way street, I think. Like I said, there's some good and there's some bad. There's I
Well,
would
I think the last word on it, my opinion, would be, I wore out a Model 15-4 snub and felt horrible about it. If you love the old guns, great. I own the old guns. I love the old guns. Enjoy them. Shoot them in a relaxed, more recreational setting. But if for the guns you're going to just put a shitload of rounds through and carry and beat hard, why not do it with the new gun? Go beat the new gun up and keep your old ones nice. I mean, I just don't see the point in taking, for instance, I would not go to Thunder Ranch defensive revolver, 3 times a year with a 1935 38 44 heavy duty, brand new unfired, with paperwork owned by, Charles Askins or something, and just go out and shoot the shit out of it and blow it apart. Like, why would you do that? Buy a new production gun to go beat up and keep that one nice. I mean, those guns will not be around forever. They will eventually dry up and become rare like a lot of other things. So we should
Yeah.
probably do our best to kind of, it's see the thing with vintage revolvers, they're going through the same thing now. I'm also a car guy. They're going through the same thing now that the 60s, well, the 50s, 60s, and 70s era cars and muscle cars went through. Back then they were just cars, and a lot of the older guys still view them just as cars. It's like a friend of mine's got a 67 Camaro RS. Car's beautiful. Bought it as like a survivor car. It had been painted once in its life, but it was, pretty much all stock. 327 four speed. Nice car. Well, he came up to the track with me and my friends. He started racing it a little bit, and little by little, he started doing a few things to it, but it went over the deep end. Now the car has been cut and tubbed, four linked, back halved, tubular front chassis, everything, big block. The car is cut up to a point to where it will never be a pristine, uncut, unmolested 67 Camaro RS. It's just another one gone. And I feel like the old revolvers are the same way. People are going to blow these things apart to where they can't be rebuilt. And they're just going to dry up just like the muscle cars did. So that's kind of the way I'm looking at it, is preservation of history. So go shoot the new ones, for heavy use, for going to class, for carrying and stuff like that. That's just my opinion.
It's a lot easier to walk into the store and replace that Model 66 if you lose it on a fishing trip versus having that 19 in your holster and have it fall out of a holster while you're trying to shimmy up a tree or something, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at. You don't want to be out on the street and, God forbid, have to use it, and then the cops take it and they etch an evidence number right into your nickel-plated finish, and you probably won't get it back anyway. So, it'd be better for them to do that with a new production gun that you can replace. You shouldn't carry a gun that you would not want taken away, what I'm getting at.
You
But
know,
yeah.
I used to know a guy in Montana, and that's what he always, this guy was kind of a fly by night kind of guy, you know, handle things my way or no way. And that's what he told me that one time, like, you don't carry a gun, you're not afraid to throw in the river.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, all right. So I got a couple more questions on my side. I think we got that one pretty well wrapped up. Robert, been listening for a while, and he wanted to know about a good left hand cowboy holster and a Rooster Cogburn gun, you know, John Wayne pistol. So you why don't you go first on that? If you're looking at if you're looking for a Western style cowboy rig for a 73 Colt clone, where would you look, especially left handed?
There's only one answer in the book for that one. That would be contact Rob Leahy at simplyruggedleather.com. Have him build you one of his Eldorado rigs or whatever they are, the the traditional rigs he builds. I mean, and you know, you can contact him personally and kind of tailor fit and personalize, you know, whatever you get from him to your liking. He will not give you a product that you won't be happy with. And it's, you know, that's the only answer I'm going to give. I mean, unless you want to find a vintage Alfonso's of Hollywood, California rig, those are nice. But now we're talking $600-$700. You know, you could go to Rob, and what would you say you'd have in a gun belt and a holster and the whole shebang from him if you went all out on all options? What, $300 or $400?
Yeah.
If you just went hog wild and clicked every damn box.
Yeah, I think Robert was looking for more of a budget friendly. But yeah, the Rob Leahy of Simply Rugged's a good one. I've got a couple of his semi. I got
if you're wanting budget, then get a Triple K Gunfighter belt and get a. I think Bianchi still makes it. It's just called a Desperado holster, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just a basic open top. Or El Paso Saddlery. El Paso Saddlery makes it.
El Paso Saddlery was one of the names I was going to bring up. Rob makes some really nice. He makes his Mexican loop style holster, his shootist model. He makes his El Dorado style. He makes his cattleman holster. I've got a couple of those, and they're really nice. But they're all going to run you about $100 plus a belt. The Triple K cartridge belts, I think, run about $50.
And the Triple K belts are actually pretty nice. I have a couple of them. The Triple K stuff is good quality. There's nothing wrong with it. It to me, the Triple K is a Chevrolet. It's nothing wrong with it. Rob stuff is, you know, it's more of a 427 four-speed Stingray, and the Triple K stuff is just a base model 350 automatic. They both get the job done. But it just depends on, you know, how fast do you want to go, how much money you want to spend.
Yeah, with Robert, how much money do you want to spend? He can make that stuff up in shark skin, gator skin. I mean, you name it, he can make it. I'm going to be honest with you. If I was looking for a budget-friendly left-handed holster, there is a bunch, especially for like the 73 and the Rugers and different Colt clones and whatever else. You can go on eBay, and there is usually a fair amount of, you know, small maker that hand make them, and they stick them up on eBay, and they kind of, you know, like they have a generic thing on the eBay store, and they'll make you what you want, left-handed, right-handed, cross-draw, whatever. And I've bought quite a few holsters off of eBay like that, and they're generally pretty good if you, you know, don't pick a machine made, mass produced, cheap leather holster. If you try to look for one that looks like it's handmade by a smaller hobbyist, they're generally pretty good. Now, you can get a decent holster and a belt, you know, for $50 each, you know, doing them that way.
Yeah, and another option, if he could find a SASS, you know, Cowboy Action Club or group to get on, someone may be selling a used rig. You know, they may have went to a 5.5-inch gun and lost some weight or something, and they got a perfectly good, somewhat used belt and left-hand holster, you know, that they would sell for, you know, something high quality like an Alfonso's of Hollywood or something like that, and they're willing to sell it, you know, at a much lower price, you know, sub-$100. That would be a good way to get into some good leather. But you know, I'll tell you, when it comes to leather, you do get what you pay for. So it's like if you kind of buy the Triple K stuff, you know, it may last you a couple of years and then it breaks. Now, the thing about if you were to just go ahead and splurge the $100 or so, you know, for Rob, it's Simply Rugged to build you something, it's going to last you a lifetime. And if you ever have a problem with it, Rob will fix it. So yeah, for the price of 3 Triple K holsters that you break over a period of 5 years, you could get something from Rob, and it will literally, you can give it to your children and they can give it to their children. Your grandchildren will be able to have it. It's heirloom quality, especially if you've bought a halfway decent 73 clone. I mean, you're already in, you know, $400 or $500 or more for the gun, depending on what you bought, whether it's, the EMF, Great Western or Uberti, Cimarron, Traditions, you know, all those. Depending on what you bought, what model. And you said he was asking about the Rooster gun.
Yeah, he mentioned a rooster gun.
Now, are we talking the rooster shooter that's made by what is Cimarron or whatever, or the actual gun Rooster Cogburn shot in True Grit?
I think he was looking for like a, I think he was asking about like a reproduction, but I think it's either you Birdie or Cimarron, they make a a copy that's got kind of that worn nickel finish on it, and then the fake ivory grips with the finger grooves and all that, and
Yeah, the
they're
rooster
not,
shooters, they run 600 to 700 bucks.
yeah, they're not that expensive, honestly though. If it was me and I was looking for a, I think Rooster's gun had what a, was it a four and a half, or was it a 5.5 inch barrel?
Four and five eighths. John Wayne was always a 4 5/8 guy.
So if I was looking, now that the Ruger Nuvacaros are actually true to a 73 Colt clone size, if I was looking for something for long term durability, I would get the Ruger Vaquero with nickel finish, or stainless. I don't think they do the actual nickel, but the
Yeah, but they
stainless.
do a very nice polished stainless. It's
They
very
do a
nice.
very nice polished stainless. You can pick up the new Ruger Vaqueros for like 650, so you're only 100 bucks more than that one. And then get a pair of grips for it. Those novelty reproduction grips like that are 25 to 50 bucks from every place you can imagine: Amazon, eBay, Midway
And
USA.
if you wanted something really nice, I don't know if he could do it, but I would assume it probably wouldn't be a big deal. I bet David Alsup could build you a set of grips and put those grooves in them, and he could do the aged, nice, use like a bone or something and age it, and it would look, very authentic. But not only authentic, it would feel authentic, because nothing feels worse to me than, when you pay a lot of money for a high dollar six gun and it's got a plastic or rubber set of grips on it. It's like
Yeah,
taking a
just
beautiful woman and putting, a horrible, crappy, dress on her. It's like, well, okay, that's kind of sucks. Or kind of
yeah.
like when, a guy actually makes money and drives a brand new truck, but, has nasty old $5 jeans with holes all in them because he's too cheap to buy a halfway decent set of Wranglers. If you're gonna spend the money, go all the way.
I feel personally attacked by that last comment, Nick, because I make pretty decent money, but I'm sitting here in a pair of worn out jeans with holes in the knees because I'm too cheap to go buy a new pair. I'm not very happy about that comment. I'm a little offended by that.
Daniel, you can go on eBay and buy Wranglers for like next to nothing.
Not in my size. You'd be surprised how hard it is to find regular pants my size.
Well,
But
if you
anyway.
start eating clean like me and going to the gym, you won't have to wear that size.
Yeah, anyway. But anyway, yeah, so if you were looking for that's like an off the shelf you Birdie Cimarron, one of those two makes the just like Rooster's gun, ready to go, buy it off the shelf, go shoot it. But if it was me, if I was gonna spend the extra money to get the good holster and rig, I'd spend the extra 100 to 150 bucks and buy the Ruger, and then save up and pay the 50 bucks and get a nice set of grips for it. And then the nice thing about the Rugers is, and I know you're not a fan of them, Nick, but I am. The Ruger does have a transfer bar, so if you're practicing quick draw or shooting from the hip or anything like that, it does offer a little protection if your thumb slips off the hammer while you're trying to cock it back
Now,
to
I
keep
will say,
yourself from.
when he's talking about the rooster gun, just in case he's talking about the other gun in True Grit, the gun that the girl gives him that he's working for, that is a Colt Dragoon. That is a 44 caliber Dragoon. And you can buy that gun from you Birdie for about 350 bucks.
Yeah, if you wanted to one up Nick and his 51 Navy, you could get that Dragoon, and that was some pretty serious firepower back in the day. That thing shot a.
They still are, man. I mean, they're still you pretty much have to have Magnum behind the name to beat it with another modern revolver.
I've been messing with this 40, so I got this Ruger Vaquero last week, and I've been shooting it a little bit the last few days. And So back in the day, back in way back in the day when the 45 Colt came out, I believe, and I haven't really read up or researched, I'm just pulling numbers out of the back of my head, but I believe the original 45 Colt load was a 250 to between a 250 and a 255 grain bullet over top of 40 grains by volume of 2FG black powder. And that gave a that was given a velocity from the Colt single actions of about 910, 920 foot per second, right in there somewhere. Then when the Army adopted it, they decided they wanted a little bit lighter load later on, and they settled on 30 grains of by volume of 3FG, which gave an average velocity of about 750 foot per second. So when the 45 Colt, when we all started converting over to smokeless powder, that was the load that everybody just kind of standardized with a 250 grain bullet between 750 and 800 foot per second. And to be frankly, it sucks. You know, a 250 grain bullet at 950 foot per second is nothing to sneeze at. And trying to duplicate that load with all these guns that have fixed sights, like the Vaqueros and the 73 clones, the ones I've played with are all regulated to the lower 700 foot per second you see out of most factory cowboy loads today. And you load up to a 950 foot per second with that 250 grain bullet, and I'll shoot about 4 inches low at 20 yards.
Yeah, I've seen that. And I've also noticed that with a lot of my guns, because typically when I shoot 45 Colts, even in a Colt clone, I mean, I prefer that 950 feet a second, 255 grain bullet. I think cowboy action shooting is great, but I think it's also kind of a curse in the way that it's tailored the ammunition that you buy, the bulk 45 Colt ammunition that actually comes in a box of 50. You know, they're mouse farts. They're nothing. They're like 600 and 700 foot per second smoke wagons. They're not useless for anything but punching holes in paper.
With a 250 grain bullet, 670 foot per second is where the sight at 20 yards, 15 yards. I'm shooting at 15 yards right now. 670 foot per second is where the sights are regulated to on that Vaquero I have, 4 5/8 inch model. It's an old model Vaquero. And that's where the sights want to hit to the point of aim at 15 yards at 670 foot per second. So for me to shoot 900 foot per second like I want to, and if I want to hit to the point of aim, I'm going to have to file that front sight off a little bit.
Yep. And most old guys did back in the day. Your lawmen and real shooters, they all filed their front sights to regulate to the load they shot the most in their particular gun.
Yep, pick a range, pick a load, file the front sight to fit. And, you know, Ruger or these other brands might make the front sight a little bit high, but I'll bet you with the standard cowboy action loads, it would probably hit point of aim or pretty dang close. Yeah. But since I'm trying to push, you know, in what I call a proper 45 Colt load, 950 foot per second, it's hitting, 4 inches low at 15 yards.
Now, while we're on the subject of 45 Colt, me and my friend Lewis have been talking a lot of revolvers lately because he's had some time off and he's looking at getting a 44 Magnum, which I am in fully support of. But, you know, I mentioned to him, you know, not to forget about, you know, all the other great big boys. And I gave him the options of, 45 Colt, 44 Special, 41 Magnum, stuff like that, you know. And honestly, for most people, 44 Magnum's great, but most people would be better off with a 45 Colt and a quality gun. You know, a lot of people come to me and they're like, hey, I want to buy a 44 Magnum. I'm like, great. Cause you know me, I'm a 44 Magnum guy, just like you are. And I'm like, hey, yeah, sure. What do you want? What do you want to spend? And they're like, you know, they tell me what they want to spend, and it's nowhere near the money to get a decent like Ruger Super Blackhawk or a Smith & Wesson 629 or a Ruger Redhawk. And I'm like, you know, so when people come to me like that, I always recommend the same gun, and you'll probably support this gun. I recommend they go buy a Ruger Blackhawk 5.5 inch 45 convertible, 45 Colt with a 45 ACP cylinder, because, you know, that's a $600 gun total out the door. And the reason for that is it does a lot of different things. It wears a lot of different hats. All these people say they want a big bore. They literally usually only need it once a year when they go up, you know, on some bullshit hiking trip in the mountains. So for that, you can load that 340 grain buffalo bore plus P45 and it'll handle it, and you can do whatever you want with it. And when you're back home, instead of shooting the expensive and underpowered 45 Colt ammunition, since you're going to shoot this thing most of the time without monster magnum ammunition, you slap the other cylinder in it and you can shoot aluminum and steel case BS 45 auto $12 to $13 a box ammunition, but you're still shooting 1,000 foot per second, 230 gram projectile, you know, out of this gun all the time. It makes it a lot more economical. So, you know, I think that 45 Colt has been done a disservice by the technology of the guns that it was popular for. Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with a 73 Colt. It's probably one of my favorite guns. Nothing fits my hand better. I don't shoot another gun better than I do a single action Army. They're beautiful guns, beautifully made. The stuff that people figured out over 100 years ago, as far as the, you know, when Samuel Colt designed that gun, it's fascinating, beautiful, and just way ahead of its time technology all the way. You got me on all that. But the gun has its limitations. You know, Elmer Keith found out that limitation on the 4th of July that year when he raised that gun up, cocked the hammer back, squeezed the trigger, and the report was awkward, and he noticed that the whole top of the gun was missing. They have very thin cylinder walls. They are perfect for that 950 feet per second, 255 grain bullet, but not much more than that. Now, when you start getting into a Ruger Blackhawk, or, you know, they were making Red Hawks in 45 Colt, or even a Smith & Wesson Model 25, you can really get the 45 Colt into the 44 Magnum category as far as power and beyond when you're talking about a Ruger Blackhawk or anything like that. It's you know, you're going from a .429 bullet with the 44 Magnum in diameter to a .454, and you have a little bit more case capacity. You have a typically heavier bullets, and you know, it's not a bad way to go. I really wish I would see more people going to the 45 Colt in a good revolver with a good barrel length and the right ammunition. You can go to Africa and hunt with a 45 Colt. There's nothing wrong with it, but you know, 44 Magnums, they're great. But, you know, I encourage any listener out there that's wanting to get a big bore, if you're going to shop for a 44 Magnum, you should look at some 45 Colts too.
You know,
it's a great cartridge.
It's funny you bring that up. It's 2 points here. If I end up sending this Vaquero back to Ruger to have it be refinished, I'm going to see if they will fit a 45 ACP cylinder to it. Because this is actually the first Ruger 45 Colt I've ever owned that was not a convertible. And then as far as loading heavy with the 45 Colt, my dad actually prefers the 45 Colt to the 44 Magnum because and I've never really played with it, and I just heard him talk about it a few times, but he thinks, or he claims, that the 45 Colt is less sensitive to bullet weight changes and load weight changes and having an effective point of impact. Like with a 44 Magnum, if you're shooting 185 grain hollow points and you switch to a 300 grain wide flat nose, it's going to shift the point of impact and you will have to adjust the sights.
By quite a bit, right? What's that, like 2 or 3 feet at, say, 50 yards?
I've usually just sighted in for 300 and leave it. But yeah, that's what my dad says. He says that the 45 Colt is less picky, or it is much less difference between loads because of the way the powders burn and whatnot in the larger bore. I've never tested that theory myself, but my dad normally knows what he's talking about when it comes to that stuff. He's done a lot of shooting over the last 50 years that you've been playing with guns.
I can back up what your dad's saying. You know, that 7.5-inch Blackhawk 45 Colt of mine, you know, I've also had a bunch of Ruger Super Blackhawk 7.5-inch 44 Magnums, and going from, we'll just talk off the shelf loads because I'm sure most of the audience is buying their ammunition at Walmart or wherever. If we're talking, say, Remington Green and White Box 180 grain soft point, versus PMC bronze 240 grain jacketed hollow points. The 180 and 240 in the Super Blackhawks, a huge difference. Typically at an indoor range of, say, 20 yards, I was noticing 4 to 5 inches of difference as to where it hit to the sights. You know, when I always set my sights to 240 because that was the most common off-the-shelf ammo. And when I shoot the 180s, you know, they would shoot a little bit high. I figured they'd shoot low. But so when I was shooting the Blackhawk 45 Colt, I went between – as dumb as it sounds, because all the cowboy action stuff, ammunition, I don't like. So for about $5 more per 50, I was buying, when it was on sale, Sig Sauer V-Crown nickel-plated case, 230-grain, 45 Colt hollow points, and just shooting those. And I noticed between shooting those, a 255-grain lead flat nose and a 180-grain, I don't know where I found them, but they were just, I think it actually was Arms Corps ammunition. It's like 180-grain, full metal jacket, 45 Colts. It, man, under an inch of difference. It seemed to not really care. I don't know if it's, maybe it's the rate of twist in the 45 Colt barrels, or if it's the pressure it operates at, or its diameter. I will say 45 Colt bullets, if you got at least 4 inches of barrel, they tend to stabilize really well, and they're super consistent when it comes to accuracy. Everybody calls 44 special an accurate cartridge, but the 45 Colt doesn't have to take a back seat to any other cartridge when it comes to being inherently accurate. That's just my thought.
If I have to pick between the 44 special and the 45 Colt, I think I like the 45 Colt just a little bit better. Absolutely. In modern. And that goes to the question that was asked earlier, modern guns better than the old ones. And this would be a plus to that, because you're going to have a harder time blowing up a Ruger Blackhawk or a Ruger Vaquero or any of these other bigger modern framed guns versus, what was it, 1925, when Elmer Keith blew the top three chambers off of a 73 Colt. They just, and the metals are better, and they're better built, they're tighter built. And yeah, I mean, in that aspect, the newer ones are a little bit better.
And, you know, the last thing I'll say about the whole 45 Colt thing, you know, yeah, you can go buy an $800 629. You can buy all those guns. I love them. They're great. But I'm telling you, like, this is an opinion. This is truly fact. A $600 Blackhawk 45 convertible in whatever barrel length you want is the best value and the most versatile handgun you can buy. You can literally hunt anything on the continent and on the dark continent with, I don't know why they always called Africa the dark continent. It's actually sunnier than it is here, but whatever. You can hunt Africa with it, Canada, anything that crawls, or you could go kill a sperm whale with it. I mean, 45 Colt and with modern loads from great companies like Ashley Emerson over at Garrett Cartridge or Buffalo Bore, Double Tap, any of the premier cartridge companies can set you up with a cartridge to make a 45 Colt do anything. That is if you don't get to the reloading bench, which then opens up this whole beautiful world of what it can do. And you're not still, like, if you can only buy one gun, say, I'll speak for the guys out there that are working them $25,000 a year jobs. If you don't have a lot of money, instead of spending money on two or three guns, you could buy, you say, a Ruger Blackhawk 45 convertible with a 4 5/8 inch barrel, have Rob Lee make you a sourdough pancake in the waistband for it. And you can carry this thing on the street with a 45 auto cylinder loaded with plus P Golden Sabers in it and two really cheap Pro Mag 1911 magazines loaded with extra 45 ammo to load it. You know, you can load from the magazine right into the cylinder, and they eject really well because the 45 auto cases are really short and you got a big long ejector rod. It makes a great carry gun. And then you can swap the cylinder out for 45 Colt, and then you can have some Elmer Keith Memorial Magnum time with it. You can do everything with that one gun. It will do everything from basic self-defense to hunting to defense against things that you see on the National Geographic Channel. So if you can only afford one gun, or instead of buying three and wasting your money, it's really hard to beat. I know I sound like a Ruger salesman right now, even though I'm a Smith & Wesson guy. Smith & Wesson does not make a gun in their lineup that is that versatile. They're Smith & Wesson's tend to be one-trick ponies, and I love them. They're my favorite. But a lot of those guns that they build are a one-trick pony, whereas the Blackhawk is truly like Bill Ruger's masterpiece. That gun, if you can't do it with a Blackhawk, you probably can't do it with anything. And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, and you know, Ruger currently makes their Red Hawk in a 45 Colt, and they are moon clip cut, so you can still shoot 45 ACP in those with a moon clip.
Yeah, they are, and that's a great option. And they're not very expensive. They're what, about $850? That same price
as $29. I think I've seen them. I think I've actually seen them sub $800. They're not terribly expensive, and it is a round butt on that particular model. So if you are wanting to get, it's a big gun to carry concealed, but it is a round butt. So I don't know if that helps that much, but it may. But yeah, the Ruger makes a really nice 45 Colts, and they hold up really well. So Nick, while we're on the subject of Rugers and 45 Colts, do we want to talk about what happened to my Ruger 45 Colt?
Oh boy.
Well, I was trying to, since I was telling you, I was trying to duplicate some of the old black powder loads. I got curious while I was at it to play around with some black powder substitutes. I think I've mentioned on the show before how hard it is to get real black powder here in Alaska. It's virtually impossible. But substitutes are easy to find. You know, you can get the Alliant Black MZ up here at Sportsman's Warehouse for like $8 or $9 a pound. It's actually really cheap when you consider that regular pistol powders are about $35 a pound, smokeless powders. So I was playing with some of that Alliant Black MZ and Pyrodex pistol, trying to play around with loads. 40 grains by volume with the Pyrodex, I got an average velocity of that out of that 4 5/8 inch barrel of 916 foot per second. And with the Alliant Black MZ, I was getting an average velocity of 961 foot per second, and it was much clear. I actually got more smoke. You know, one of the fun things about black powder is the big cloak smoke cloud. I was getting more smoke with the Black MZ, but overall the gun was cleaner, my brass was cleaner, and Alliant claims that it is virtually uncorrosive.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. And I played with it a little bit more today. Shot some pretty decent groups with it. I have some more bullets on order from the Bull Shop, probably with their NASA. They have their NASA black powder lube, which is, in my opinion, the best black powder lube on the market. I've got a couple hundred of their 250 grain original from the Lyman 454-190 mold on the way here, so I can continue testing the black powder substitutes later on. But anyway, getting into the direct part of the story. So last night, I stripped the gun down. I decided to go ahead and the gun was built in 2000, but it just came into my possession, and I think it was on fired when I got it, knowing the guy I got it from, and just judging on the way the gun looked and all. So I decided to go ahead and strip it down. Trigger's a little stiff and a little gritty. I figured I'd just go ahead and polish a few parts on it. So I stripped it all the way down, and I threw all the parts into I boiled some water, put it in a larger plastic tub, and I put in some dish soap, and I threw all the parts into that dish soap water mix, except for the barrel and frame. I went ahead and I was wetting patches with it out of the tub, scrubbing the barrel out, wetting a toothbrush, scrubbing around all the nooks and crannies in the frame. Once I got done, I went ahead and put it in the water bath to go ahead and soak for a few minutes, and I pulled out the cylinder and started scrubbing on it. And as soon as I started scrubbing and wiping on it, the finish just rubbed off in my hands. I'd always assumed, and I believe Ruger uses an actual real bluing on those guns, but whatever was in, my wife has this fancy green, you know, plant-based fancy soap. It's like 7th generation or something like that. And Whatever's in that soap, apparently citric. I think it must have been the citric acid from I've been talking to different people, but it did some real numbers on the finish on that Ruger Vaquero.
Yeah, I saw. Thing
Yeah,
looked
I'll
like
put.
it was drugged behind a truck by a bunch of guys that good, bad, and the ugly. It was pretty rough.
Yeah, it looks like it currently looks like the thing's seen 100 and like it's an original 73 Colt. It looks like it's seen 100 years of in and out of the holster and thrown on the floorboard of the truck and everything else. It just nearly completely stripped that finish off of the gun, grip frame, ejector rod, barrel frame, everything else. You know, but I was sitting here freaking about the cylinder and I didn't even think about trying to pull the frame and all the rest of the parts out of that water bath. So they sat in there long enough to pull the finish off of those too, and it just it bugs me because I never even considered the citric acid. I didn't really consider citric acid being bad on the finish on those guns, and I should have known better. And I just, you know, dish soap. I've cleaned muzzle loaders and black powder cartridge rifles and whatever else with boiling water and Dawn dish soap for, you know, my whole life. And I've never had an issue. And I just, oh, dish soap is dish soap. And I poured some of that thing in the tub and put parts in there. And yeah, that was quite a surprise.
It'll happen, man. Happens to the best of us.
So I've got two options with it. Actually, I've got three options. I could just leave it alone, chalk it up to a learning experience, and you know, it's a shooter grade gun anyway, just shoot it. Option
Yeah,
number two.
maybe we should let the audience decide what you do with it.
All right, I'll pose. I
Well,
don't think I.
let's give them three options. You give them two, and I'll give them one.
Okay. So option number one is leave it. I'll post some pictures on the Facebook page. I've put some on my personal page here and there and different gun groups. But yeah, so option number one is just leave it and shoot it. Option number two would be to send it back to Ruger. I am fairly positive they would re-blue it for free, and while it's there, pay them to fit a 45 ACP cylinder. So.
What I would do with it personally, if it was my gun, because it is a big frame Vaquero, I've never seen one done like this, but the first thing that needs to happen is the grip frame needs a hole drilled in the bottom of it, and it needs a lanyard loop. Every good revolver has a lanyard loop. And after you do that, the gun needs to be Parkerized all over, barrel frame, everything. A full Parkerization, lanyard loop, and a beautiful set of stags built by David Alsup. And that thing would be sweet. That would be like your packing gun, the one that you can really put some wear on since it's Parkerized. Perfect.
Yeah. The other option I had in mind is save up the money and send it to Bobby Tyler and have it as Ruger uses that Fox you know fake chemically
Case
case
hardened
color.
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not actually case hard, it's chemically done. I could send it to Bobby and have him re-blue it and have him really put some real case colors on it. It would cost, but you get what you pay for. Did you see that? Are you friends with Andy Larson from Skinner Sights on Facebook?
Sure am. By the way, Skinner Sights makes some damn fine sights. You need
Yeah.
sights for, you know, any Marlin lever gun, Henry. I mean, I think he even makes them for the Henry
Yeah,
single
he.
shots, Rossi single shots. You need a good set of sights. Skinner sights are the way to go.
Yeah, did you see that 1895 Marlin he built up to send to that hunting, I think it was a Hunting Foundation auction.
Oh yeah, that thing was beautiful.
If I could get some case coloring like that on this Ruger Vaquero, that would be just gorgeous. I'm gonna go ahead and have it re-blued with a proper, you know, deep charcoal blue.
Yeah, that would be sweet.
So
I don't
that's.
know why I'm the end of the Parkerized lanyard loop thing. I think it's just because it looks old school military, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, if I was gonna Parkerize it, I think walnut grips go better with Parkerizing than the stags. If it goes to Bobby, I'll have a good set of stags made for it. If I end up leaving it alone, it just kind of has that aged look right now. If I end up leaving it alone, I'll probably have a set of aged stags or aged bone put on it. But so
You
that's
know.
another option. I mean, option number, now we're getting, I said three options. Here's another one that I've been thinking about doing too, is I've been looking for a candidate to build my own blueing tanks and try reblueing a gun myself, and that might be a good candidate for that. Be like, oh, I can't really screw it up. I can't really
Can't
screw
make
it
it
up
any
any
worse.
worse. Yeah, it's already pretty screwed. I was gonna do that model, that M&P, that 1905 I have. That was going to be my reblueing experimental gun.
Oh, that
But
gun needs to be nickel.
yeah, I may use this Vaquero. So one of those options, but we'll see. If Ruger, I'm probably gonna call Ruger this week, and if they offer to do it for free and they will fit a 45 ACP cylinder to it, I'll probably just send it to them and be done with it.
There you go. That wouldn't be a bad deal.
So, all righty. Well, you have any more questions, listener questions, Nick? I've got a couple more here. I think we got time for one more.
Go have one more.
Okay. What was your first gun? This one's also from Jeb.
Okay, First long gun was a Mossberg 702 Plinkster, or whatever they're called, little 22 rifle. First handgun I owned, I can't even remember, but I tell you I know the first one I bought with my own money was a Smith and Wesson Model 10-3 round butt tapered barrel, Washington D.C. police trade in. And I probably put, and this is no BS, literally over 30,000 rounds to that gun in a year. I worked at a gun shop part time and just took ammunition, store credit, but I just bought ammo and got to use the range for free. And I literally put 30,000 rounds or more through that gun, is what I counted it up to, by the box. And literally shot that gun to pieces. And I had a 10-5 after that. And I started buying 1911s. I had a couple of Rock Islands early on. And I started buying Ruger Commanders and they came out. But yeah, Smith and Wesson Model 10 was my first. And I always had Ruger semi-autos shortly after. The first semi-auto I carried was a Ruger P95 DC. I had a 95 DC, an 85 Mark II, an 89 DC, a 90 DC, and a 94 DC 40 caliber. I was a P series nut, still am. But yeah, 10-3 was my first gun or handgun.
Yeah, my first gun was a, I think it was Christmas. I got it for Christmas when I was 6 years old. Do you remember the Springfield M6 survival carbines
Yes, I do. Those are very cool.
with that funky trigger you squeezed up into the frame instead of actually pulling?
Yeah.
That was my first gun. I had a Springfield M6 22 Hornet over 410.
Very cool. Very cool.
And man,
22 is a dandy cartridge.
yeah, I was 6 years old. I got that gun for Christmas at 6 years old, and that actually led to my hand loading journey because my
Now,
dad was.
couldn't you shoot 45 Colts out of the 410 barrel? I mean, I
I
know it ain't rifled, but weren't they kind of made to where, in a pinch, you could kind of use it as a smoothbore?
I think they I don't know I don't remember. That was a long time ago. That was 20 years ago. I don't remember that. But that was what led to my hand loading journey, because that was the old dad made me when he gave me that rifle, is you can shoot it all you want, but you got to put the ammo together yourself. So 6 years old, I'm out there with a hand punch and a hammer, punching primers out, putting primers back in, and then no powder, just a 22 caliber pellet pushed down to the neck of the case, and shooting in the garage till I got good enough to hit a pop can every time. And then I progressed to real ammo, and then I started loading 22 Hornet, 45 grain cast bullets, and then moved on up. And yeah, that was my first gun, and I didn't even remember what I traded it for. I traded it for, and I got too big to really be able to shoot it comfortably. I traded it for a Savage Model 24 22 long rifle over 20 gauge. And I had that right up until a few years ago when a bunch of my guns got stolen.
Oh, that's a bummer.
And then my first pistol, I got two pistols right around the same time, and I can't remember which one was first. But up until a few years ago, I mean, I had all Ruger pistols for a long time. My first two pistols was, number one was a Ruger single six 22-22 mag convertible with a 5.5-inch barrel and adjustable sights. And the other one, my first, I got it, I think I was 13 when I got this one, right around the same time I got that 22. I had a Ruger Security 6 and 357.
Nice.
And yeah, that was, I started carrying that gun, you know. Here in Alaska, kids can carry guns as long as they have written permission from their parents on them. So yeah, my mom and dad didn't care. They wrote me a note. Yeah, he can carry a gun. And I started carrying that single six, or I'm sorry, that Security six all over the place. And that was actually the gun, that 4-inch Security six is the gun I had. I shot that moose with that was stomping on me when I hit it with a snow machine.
Yeah. And then that's when you went right to a 44 Magnum.
Yep. Yep. I hit the moose stomping on me. I shoot it with 357, and it didn't die quite as quickly as I would have liked for it to. It still got a chance to stomp on me pretty good. And yep, I traded that Security six for a 5.5-inch Ruger Bisley Vaquero and 44 Magnum. And I've pretty much carried 44 mag revolvers ever since. That's been my go-to revolver caliber since then.
What? No 10 millimeter?
You know, it's funny you bring up the 10 millimeter. We did that episode the other day, or was it last week or was it the week before? But anyway, I have gotten more hate mail over that episode because I didn't really think we hate talked on the 10 millimeter. We just said it wasn't as good as some of the other options we talked about. I've gotten, well, you must have never actually shot a 10 millimeter if you don't think it's the best. I'll tell you what.
Well, I got three things to say. Epstein didn't kill himself. 10 millimeter is not a 41 Magnum. It's really not even more than a 357 Magnum, if it's even like a 357, unless you buy really heavy ammunition. Most guys don't. They're buying off-the-shelf ammo, which is essentially 45 plus P power level stuff. And the real guns are wheel guns. So, nope, yeah. Not 10 millimeter, you know, guy.
It's funny because I've been keeping track a little bit about, you know, I've gotten messages asking questions, and I get a few calls from local people that I know that have questions and want to talk about things on the show. But the two most common things I've heard up until that after the 10 millimeter, that is the most common thing. Oh, I can't believe you don't like the 10 millimeter. You're, you know, blah, 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 blah. And the other thing I hear a bunch is, you know, I like the show. It's a good show. But that guy that carries that 51 Navy, he's a little weird.
I am a little weird. I'm a very eccentric man.
All righty, Nick. Well, I think we probably ought to get this one wrapped up. We're sitting at just over an hour here already. I appreciate everybody taking the time out of their day to listen to our show. We've hit 200 listeners as of this week, which was a pretty big deal to me. I didn't realize that many people would take the time, and, you know, it was this is something I really enjoy doing. I look forward to it every week, you know, getting to sit down and talk about guns. We've got a couple other people we might try to get on the show here in the next couple of weeks just to sit down and, you know, drink coffee and talk about guns. And it's really cool to see that we're getting that many listeners. I appreciate everybody taking the time out of their day to listen to our show.
Yeah, definitely. And, I'm looking to make another purchase this week. I can't decide if I'm going to get another Colt clone in 45 or if I'm going to get a Blackhawk. Just so the audience knows, I'm looking at Blackhawks in either a 7.5-inch 30 carbine or a 4 5/8 41 Magnum or a 4 5/8 45 Colt 45 ACP conversion, or I may get a 4 5/8 Super Blackhawk 44 Magnum. I'd be curious if anyone's curious about any of those guns, which one they would like to see me acquire so I could do load development, accuracy testing, and just an overall review of the cartridge and the gun on our page, and we'll talk about it on the show. So if anyone has a preference with one of those, it helped me decide which one to get, because they're all pretty damn good, and I can't really make a decision. So that'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, you know, I'm always gonna go big bore, but that's just the way I am. The 30 carbines are cool, but make sure those things are freaking loud. I had one for a long time, and they are just so loud. They make a 357 seem like a 22.
I might like that.
Yeah, they're fun. I'll tell you what, you shoot one inside of a covered building at a range, and it'll definitely turn some heads.
Oh, so. I'm sure.
All right, Nick. Well, I think we got to go ahead and wrap this one up. I appreciate everybody taking the time to tune in. And remember, no Bernie 2020.
That's right. And no Bloomberg.